And in the spring of 1861, after many Southerners had left, the U.S. Army was down to around 14,000. And more than that, it was spread out across the continent, much of it on duty in the far west. So there isn't a United States Army present in one place and able to march against the Confederacy. It's a very small organization, and it's scattered across a gigantic landscape, much of it west of the Mississippi River. The North also did something else that prevented best use of the United States regular army early in the war, and I'll talk a little bit more about this later, but for now I'll just say that the United States decided to keep its regular army together and not to parcel out this pool of trained soldiers to help instruct the hordes of volunteers who would be coming into the army. They kept the United States Army together, and that denied all of that knowledge and expertise to volunteers who had no expertise and didn't really know the first thing about being soldiers. So that's the Army. What about the Navy? The U.S. Navy only had 90 vessels in 1861, 42 of which were in commission, 42 vessels in commission, and most of those 42 were patrolling waters far from the coastal areas and rivers of the South where they would be needed during the Civil War. So it's a small Navy, and it is a very widely dispersed Navy. Indeed, in the spring of 1861, only three ships were available for immediate service against the Confederate States. Three ships. That's not enough to make much of a difference. Moreover, the United States Navy was a deep water Navy with little expertise in the type of coastal and inshore operations that would characterize the Civil War. This is for the most part going to be a naval war fought along the coastlines and on the Mississippi River and other great rivers that lead into the Confederacy. The United States Navy of 1861 is not a navy constructed to wage that kind of war. So place the U.S. Army and the U.S. Navy on the side of Union strengths at the outset of the war, but put a little asterisk beside them because it's not as important a strength, I guess it would be fair to say, as it might at first appear to be. All right, those are Northern advantages. Clear categories in which the North has an advantage. What about the Confederacy? It also has clear advantages, although they don't seem as obvious in some ways as the Northern ones. Perhaps the greatest Confederate plus lay in the area of war aims or conditions for victory. The South had only to defend itself to achieve independence. In fact, it could do nothing, and if the United States didn't do anything, the Confederacy would win by default. The North, in contrast, had to invade the South, destroy its war-making capacity, or at least the will to win or to resist on the part of the Southern people. It would take a protracted, major effort for the United States to accomplish that, a much different goal for the North than the goal for the Confederacy going into the war to achieve their respective objects. If the South could just prolong the war long enough to convince a majority of the Northern people that it was too expensive of lives or too expensive of treasure to continue, they would win the war. A tie was as good as a win for the Confederacy. If they could just hold off the North until the North said that's enough, the Confederacy would win. The North did not have that luxury. The Confederacy, in other words, didn't have to send its armies into the North, didn't have to try to capture Northern cities, didn't have to try to destroy the war-making capacity of the United States in order to win. The North did have to do all of those things to defeat the Confederacy. And there was a tremendous example readily at hand to bolster Confederate expectations and will. They had to look no further than the experience of the colonies during the American Revolution to see a weaker party that had won in a war against a much stronger party by dragging the war out, convincing the more powerful party that its interests lay elsewhere and that it was simply too expensive to continue that war. That's how the United States had achieved independence, and people in both the North and the South were well aware of that. Now, closely tied to the fact that the Confederacy enjoyed an edge in this respect, in what it had to do to win, was the fact that a defending force almost always enjoys an advantage over an invading force, an advantage in morale. Men tend to fight harder to defend their homes than they do to try to impose their will on others who are defending their homes. Observers on both sides were again well aware of this, that the defender often enjoys higher morale